Welcome, folks, to episode 3816 of the Survival Podcast. Today is Monday, March the 16th, 2026, and that means we're halfway through March, and when March is over, we'll be one quarter through the new year. Tick-tock, tick-tock, the clock ticks for us all. And the clock has been ticking this year kind of crazy. There are things going on in the world today that even a prognosticator like myself, didn't really see coming. Things like snatching the president of Venezuela out of his bed in the middle of the night and then turning around and bombing the shit out of Iran. I know some people don't believe this when I say it, but these topics and other topics in the political, geopolitical, space are my least favorite shows to do. I didn't say I didn't like them. I didn't say I hated them, because if I hated them, I just wouldn't do them at all. But they're the least interesting to me because the conclusions always end up being that the things that we do are the things we should be doing. In kind of the prepper, homesteader, permaculture, regen ag, provide something for yourself and have a plan B space. And additionally, in the worlds of lifestyle design, but and in building a better life and entrepreneurship and skill development, all the stuff, all this stuff does is it should pour gas on the fire of the importance of doing these things. But I do these shows like this for a variety of reasons. One, because you guys show up. Two, because sometimes they're inspired by people that ask the right question. And that was today. I'm going to explain that in just a minute. But the other reason is because people get so hung up on this shit that even when they talk about doing all the things we try to teach you how to do, they're so hung up on this stuff that they don't do those things. So if we don't address that concern, then we have a whole segment of the community that just kind of stays in a stall mode. And that's just not a way to be in life. You know, that's what I started out with. We're halfway through the third month of the year 2026. And some of y'all, that it's hitting a little bit, but you don't really get it yet. But if you've been around for half a century, that starts to kind of blow your mind. When you can sit back and think of, what was I doing in 1986? And maybe you were young, but you were like in high school or just getting started in life after high school or maybe college or something like that. And you can think, like, I know what I was doing. I remember Reagan was president. I remember what was going on in the world back then. This is before the Iron Curtain fell. Yep, that's how old we is. It's before the Iron Curtain fell, before the wall came down in Germany, when, you know, all those satellite republics like Ukraine and Lithuania and Estonia didn't have Olympic teams. It was just the Russians. It was really the USSR. Like, you think back to that, and you can remember that time. And that doesn't seem like so long ago. When you realize you're sitting in the year 2026, you're like, what? You start doing math on your fingers, or like that GIF with Zach, you know, the actor in it when he's like computing all the shit, like, or the crazy lady doing it. Like, wait a minute, how did that happen? And so when you have that thought and then you realize, like, a quarter of the year's almost gone and it's the year 2026, you start to get a little impetus to get things done. And as you get older, you realize there's only so many things you're going to get done with what's left of your time on this trip on Spaceship Earth. And you want to leave behind kind of an impetus to people. Hey, when you're 25, don't skate through life. And it's a real easy way to skate through life. It's very similar to the people that spend their whole day doom scrolling short videos on their day off. Just look at all this stuff. Why don't you go do some of it? Right. Like, I saw one, before I get into why I'm doing today's show, I want to tell you this, because it kind of hit me. It was one of the saddest posts I've ever seen on social media, and it wasn't AI written or anything. This was a true person who I follow a long time, who I know, that said his girlfriend said, why don't we go out and do more fun things? So he gave her, like, 8 options, all of them she rejected. And it started out, well, what do you want to do? And of course, I don't, that surprised me. Well, why don't we go do this? No. Why don't we go do that? No. And he finally ended with, so you don't want to be surprised and you don't want to do anything. So what are we going to do? And it ended with, we spent the rest of the day scrolling short videos on opposite ends of the couch. no, this is not the way to live. And you might look at that and go, but do you know how many people are doing the same thing, watching news feeds? Do you really think it's that much different? You know, they had, what's the latest on the Iran war? Yeah, we blew a bunch of shit up again, and they said it didn't happen, and it did. That's it. There you go. It's all of it. So the question that got this show going to happen today, okay, was a very simple question, a very non-loaded question. Honestly, a non-political question, though a lot of political things kind of come in around it. And it wasn't one of these stupid questions where I'm accused of supporting the war or being anti-American on the same day for the same opinion, which is just kind of, that shows you people are hearing what they want to hear. This person said, I would love your opinion and analysis. Balls and strikes. Will anything that happens in Iran, anything we do, have any positive impact on regular, everyday Americans? Will it make our life better in any way? Now, that may have been asked as a gotcha question. I don't think it was, though, knowing the person that asked it. I think it was a sincere question, and it's a great question. It's actually the question we should be asking. Now, we had somebody, and I'm not picking on them, pop up in the live chat before I even started and say, this seems like a very simple, a very short show. It shouldn't take you very long to just say no. This is exactly the problem that we're seeking to solve by answering this question in a well-thought-out, logical, methodical way that doesn't take our own opinions and jam them into the narrative of what is and what is likely to be. I'm going to come at this today the way I guarantee you haven't heard anybody do this yet. If you did, I bet you they were a podcaster and they're someone like me, right? They're not someone with a studio behind them and perfect lighting and three engineers running a soundboard. They're a regular, everyday person like me, a real podcaster. I'm going to break this down into three categories. And the most probable four things in each category that may or may not happen. And then I'm going to rank each one of them as to highly likely, 50-50, not likely at all. Score them 1, 2, or 3, with 1 meaning like this is really likely to happen. 2, we could or maybe not. 3, it's possible, but probably not. Yeah? How have you gotten that analysis from anybody? Why should we be there? How we're fighting for freedom? We're freeing these people. We're doing this. We're a bunch of assholes, and we're following whatever Israel tells us. I don't care if any of that's true or not. It doesn't actually have anything in it that answers the question, does this make our life better? I mean, even if the people we hate are behind it, it could still make our lives better. Even if the people that are behind it we love, it still could make our lives worse. And no matter who's behind it, it could have no real impact on our lives other than how we feel morally, ethically, etc. But from a mechanistic standpoint of does our net income go up or down, it might not have a damn thing to do with anything. And only when we come on that question that way can we come away with anything that looks like a factual analysis rather than one side calling the other side a bunch of morons and the other side calling the other side a bunch of idiots and each of them arguing from a anchored stance of this is what I think should be. Because what do I always tell you about the way things should be or what should happen or what should have happened? It doesn't mean square root of fuck all, does it? Does it? That's great. Yeah, that shouldn't have happened. Yeah, but it did. See, I look at analysis the way a good judge should look at conducting a trial. Now, do you think that means that if I make sure that the guy that's on trial for murder is everything is done within his rights as a defendant, that I mean I'm pro-murder? Do you think I don't want to see him swing or fried or gassed? But if I'm to do my job as a judge in that area, I actually have to be very strong on the side of the defendant toward his rights, equally to the prosecution and their rights, because if I don't do that, then what can and often would happen? And that is the guy gets convicted and the appeals court throws out the conviction and it either has to go all the way through again or it's given up on. And that's a real risk. And I think that we run that same sort of risk, different consequence, in the way that we handle issues today. It's why they've taken every major important issue, issues that should require deep soul-searching, deep philosophical questioning, deep tactical questioning. And they break that down to a catchphrase. Freedom isn't free. Ugh. Yeah. And then the other side's like, he's just kissing Netanyahu's ass or whatever. Or love is stronger than hate. Yeah. Okay. Whatever. That doesn't have a damn thing to do with what has happened, what is happening, and what the results of that will be, does it? It doesn't matter what I think. It doesn't matter what I feel. From an analytical standpoint, and this is the thing that drives me crazy, guys. A little rant here, and then we'll get on with it. I constantly get this, and I feel that I really do the best job I can to be clear on the three types of things that I say in a show like this. Now, this may not apply to like aquaponics or starting seeds or, you know, raising livestock or storing food. But when it comes to this type of thing, I try to be very clear and even pause at times and go, let me be clear. This is what I'm doing. But there's only three ways I come at this. I express my opinion. And when I do, I will say, this is my opinion. And I'm actually very careful about giving my opinion too often in these things, because I want you to come to your own conclusion based on the other two things. Two, I'm acting as a pure analyst. Basically, I'm saying, based on everything I see here, this is what I think's going on. This is what I think's the motivation. This is what I think's going to be the outcome. Now, that has nothing to do with the fuck what I want. If I look at a weather map and I see a big freaking long line of storms coming into your area, and the area you tell me in, right where that squall line is, there's a huge bow in it and a dark chartreuse thing with a bunch of fucking hail cores, I'm like, hey, skeezy, you're about to get hit with a fucking tornado. That does not mean I'm rooting for the tornado. I'm reading the radar, and I'm using the information I have at the time to tell Skeezy here, right? That looks like his name's, yeah, Skeezy, right? Get in your fucking shelter, bro. Right? No one that's got a brain, an IQ over 55, blames the meteorologist for the weather. That's what you do when you get upset over my analysis. And then three, when I'm simply reporting the facts. This thing did or did not happen. This is what happened and led up to this occurrence. Oh, you're kissing the state's ass. No, this is the things that happened. We all saw it happen. There's a video of it happening, and this is the results. I didn't actually say whether it was good or bad. I just said these things happened. But because the things that happened didn't line up with whatever narrative you wish to believe, I'm attacked. And I'm going to challenge people to not do that today, because no matter where you think this is going to end, I guarantee you when we go through three different categories and the chances of each thing happening, it's going to piss you off because some of them you don't believe. I don't believe them either. This is just a logical analysis and then a rating of the possibility. The ratings are all, I would say, relatively high. The methodology I use this, four most likely things for each of the categories, and then rated them 1, 2, or 3. And nothing rates a 3 here, except 1. Why? Because I put the four most likely things that were in the categories. And those categories are negative, positive, and neutral. Do you see? That's an analysis. Of all the things that could happen, we can look at what are the positive things that could come out of it? What are the negative things that could come out of it? What are the things that won't change our... Because remember what the question is. Should we have invaded Iraq? Not the question. Are we winning? Are they losing? Not the question. By the way, we're winning. They're losing from a military tactical standpoint. That's an opinion. But, I mean, that's, you don't have to have a very... You don't have to be... Well, you have to not be in denial to not agree with that opinion. But what does winning look like? That's the important question. They're not even going to... Just, hey... What could happen? What are the likely? That's what we're going to analyze today. Before we do that, let's go ahead and say a thank you to our sponsors of the day and remind you to do business with them. Sponsor of the day, number one today, Biltong USA. That's Anton. He's right out of South Africa. Started making Biltong in earnest for his store anyway when they shut everything down with his new business he had just started when COVID hit. And that became the mainstay of his business. He now makes many kinds of Biltong, including the regular classic Biltong and what's becoming my favorite, Biltong sticks, STIX. Recommend you check those out. The Calabanazi sausage, the Drew Wars sausage, all of it is fantastic. Shipped right to your door at prices you can't get anywhere else. for the quality of what you're getting and how much you get. Go look up biltong on Amazon. Then look how much it costs, see how much you're getting, and then realize it's dried out jerky like crap. It's not even real biltong. Then check out what Anton's doing. It is handmade and the best you'll ever eat, made the right way by someone that grew up where they literally, I don't even know this. Like in America, you go to a baseball game and there's a guy walking around selling like beer and hot dogs. In South Africa, you go to a soccer game and there's a guy walking around selling sticks of biltong and beer. Like that's how ingrained it is in their culture. They know biltong. Anton knows biltong. Check them out. And if you're an MSB member, you get a discount on an already great price on a product. Next up today, I actually just heard from Steve over at Knife Kits today. I got an email from him, said, man, you're not cutting us as a sponsor or something. Like I got an email from PayPal today and it said that my subscription for my sponsorship was canceled. And I'm like, nah, man, that's PayPal, not me. And got him a link to sign me. He signed right back up. And I said, you know, you might at this point be the longest podcast sponsor of any podcast ever. Like continuous running. And he said, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. That tells you that the people that run KnifeKits.com value this audience a great deal. They have been sponsors with us since 2011. 2011 is 2026. That's pretty badass. You know, we're well past a decade. I don't really know if anybody sponsored anything that long with real sponsorship for like actual money and things like that. So check out KnifeKits.com where you can learn to build a knife. No matter who you are, starting from kit form or if you're, you know, working on being a master bladesmith, anything in between, you have options there. So check them out. Again, KnifeKits.com. Company, you know, the name of that company, they follow one of my rules of marketing. Do what you say and say what you do. And they do that. All right. So, hey, let's start digging into this again. I want to, again, come at this with, again, I'm not picking on the guy that made that comment about it shouldn't take very long to say no. But there is some Dunning-Kruger going on that, right? The older you get, the more you realize that no complex situation can be immediately analyzed and spit out a result. Even if you're right, you don't know why you're right. You don't know the probability of being right because none of this is absolute. When you have dynamic systems interacting globally, there is no simple answer to any fucking question, right? And as your competence grows, your confidence in your calls goes down. Then it levels out and begins to rise again as you develop more and more competence. And in here, we are analyzing things that most of us are not, you know, we have not studied to analyze these things. Most of us do not have degrees in geopolitical outcomes or something like that, right? We don't sit around all day studying the politics of the Middle East and its interactions with the global economy. That's not what we do. But yeah, we can actually probably do a much better analysis of most of these situations if we're asking the right question and we're giving it the right due diligence than most of those experts because they have their heads so far up their ass they can't see. They're overconfident. They're at the top of that curve when they claim to be experts. And since no one challenges them and there's no consequence for being wrong, they live at the top of that curve. My goal today is to not only analyze this in a serious and genuine way, as devoid of my opinion as possible, though with some of my instinct coming in on the probability of the predictions, but to do so in such a way that allows you, when you have another complex issue, and Jack's not doing a show on it that week because Jack don't want to, you can do it yourself instead of just picking a tribe to throw in on their catchphrase for the thing. This is a deep thing. I mean, on one side of this, you've got one sovereign country attacking another sovereign country because we don't like what they're doing. That's just inherently wrong on the surface anyway. On the other side, you have one country who has been a global sponsor of terror. And those of you that say they have not, you probably are all the way deep in. And I'm no fan of Israel, but you're probably deep into the like Candace Owen level shit, right? You do have a country that's caused that. You have a country that does things like what just happened with their female soccer players in Australia. Like seven of them said they were going to stay in Australia. They were offered asylum. Five decided to go back because the message was basically, you want us to torture and kill your family? If not, you better come back. This is not a government you want. A government that'll do that is not a government you're looking to add to the list of nuclear powers. Now, how close are they? I don't know. I don't trust our government at all in their assessment of it. They've been 5 seconds from a nuclear weapon since 1996. Okay. I didn't even have any gray hair yet. That's how long ago the fuck that was. So I don't trust them either, but this is also it is a terrorist regime. Like when you throw all, and that there's, I can throw 100 more things on top of it. And some of y'all are already mad because even though I said the thing you wanted to hear at first, then I said the thing you didn't want to hear at second. And you can't take both of them and put them together. You have to stop that. So when I look at something like this, I want to know what are the possible outcomes? Because I also know that if I pick the phone up right now and say, hey, Trump, hey, man, this is Jack Spirico. Remember me? Like all the way back in the early 2000s, I was an advisor to one of your companies. Yeah, man, we're still cool, right? Okay, cool, Don, cool. I'm glad we're cool. Bro, here's what I want you to do. I want you to stop bombing this place. Okay, man, thank you. Like, that's not going to fucking happen. Nothing I say, nothing you say today, nothing you yell at me or agree with me on or anything like that is going to change the outcome or the ongoing process. So we have to evaluate it from what does it mean to us? And to that question, which is a great question, will it make in any way the lives of Americans better? I can answer that with three categories and only three. Neutral outcome. Nothing really changes in our lives. Pretty much Pirates of the Mississippi said it, song Feed Jack. You know, back when Saddam Hussein was still alive and we had this glorious victory in Iraq, the line in the song was, Saddam Hussein still has a job, but I don't. Tonight he'll sleep in a big warm bed, but I won't. And those lines are coming from the perspective of a homeless person on the street. And so that war neither negatively or positively affected that person. But we didn't spend the money on the war, we wouldn't have done that. Whatever thing, the other pet pod project you're thinking of, we wouldn't have done that anyway, war or no war. Wouldn't have happened. Doesn't matter, right? It's neutral. Then there's a positive outcome. A positive outcome means in some way our life will be more comfortable or more prosperous in any way whatsoever. Is that possible? It's always possible. You don't know. And then there's a negative outcome. That's pretty obvious. And that means that we'll go do all this. And not only will it not get our objectives done, not only will it not benefit us, it will actually be detrimental to our way of life. And see, the person that started this out saying it's an easy answer, no. Well, you kind of left that out. You kind of left that out, the part that it could be not good, but it also could be bad. And I would submit to you that almost anything like this, war or not related, trade deals, geopolitical shit, economic shifts, technology shifts, can be broken into these three categories. And then before we even go through them, it is almost inevitably the case that the things under each category, one will not be 100% right. There'll be some combination, like, you could have both positive and negative and neutral outcomes of this conflict. You could have both positive and negative and nothing really neutral. You could certainly have mostly neutral and a little bit of positive, or mostly neutral and a little bit of negative. And until you're willing to shut up, and I mean shut up, not yelling at me, not yelling at your screen, but I mean in your head, until you're willing to silence your own bias for enough time to perform an analysis like this, you can't get that result. And the more you feel about the issue, the harder it is. If I am analyzing a football game and it's two teams I don't give a shit about, I got to even think, like, I don't even feel good because they lost, because I know somebody that likes them and I like to rub it in. So I can't say the Bills, because then I would be like, well, I don't really give a shit about the Bills, but I get to fuck with John Dowdy, right? The Houston Texans are playing the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I could not give a fuck less. But you know what? If I have a chart in front of me and I can look at the way those two teams have been playing, who's in and who's out and things like that, I can do a really good analysis on the way that game is likely to work out, right? If it's the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Baltimore Ravens, don't ask my opinion. My bias is going to creep into that hard because I love the Steelers and I fucking hate the Ravens because of what they represent in that division. So I can't do a clear-headed analysis. I don't bet on that game. I will never, unless it's for fun. Money, I don't mind losing just for fun. But I don't think I can pick a winner there because I know I'm biased. Now, if I really, 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 really needed to, I probably could put myself into a Zen monk, you know, trance. But it ain't worth it over football. But it is worth it over geopolitics. And before we keep going, I just want to remind everybody I do answer questions at the end. And the way Ika Mouse, this is for people in the live stream only, ask that question right where with the word question in all caps first, followed by the question in a succinct 1 to 2 sentence question. That is the way to ask questions for comments on today. And so far, I have one of those. So if you already did it and I missed it, do it again now. All right. So let's look at neutral outcomes. And I'm going to tell you the truth is there is wisdom in the crowd. And when this all started, I put 4 different scenarios for the war itself, not the outcomes, but for the war itself in a poll on X that over 500 people respond to it. And the overwhelming majority of people responding to that poll picked an option that was basically false U.S. victory. And in essence, we claim victory, we sail away into the sunset, and nothing really changes. And if nothing changes there, then not much would change here. So the crowd wisdom is toward the neutral already, just saying. And these are a lot of people that hate war, very anti-war like me. Very much we shouldn't have done this, but when they pulled back and realized, okay, here's the potential outcomes, instead of saying some stupid shit like, now Iran's going to conquer the world and sink all the U.S. ships, right, and believing stupid AI videos and recycled actual videos as those are new, they kind of led toward neutral. So here's my neutral bullet points. The spending on the existing the spending on this war that everybody's talking about right now, all the people that did not give a fuck about wasting money for the last 20 years. They're shrieking about it. The spending disappears into the existing deficit system. The government already runs such a massive deficit that another war barely changes the overall fiscal trajectory. So basically, the neutral outcome would be all the talk of all the spending, and we're depleting, and we're going to have to buy this, and there's so much money wasted, and we could have solved world hunger. Nothing happens. It means nothing. It doesn't matter because the deficit is $39 trillion in climbing, and we're going to spend our way to oblivion anyway. So it's not even a rounding error in the total. On my rating system, with 1 being highly likely, 2 being 50-50, and 3 being highly unlikely, I give that a 1. I don't even think it matters if any of the other things happen. I still think from an economic standpoint, the pure spending on the war is irrelevant, and anybody talking about it is just making a point, and they're probably the same person who didn't care about spending when we were funding, you know, transgendered operas in Ireland or whatever. So that's my opinion, but my analysis, that's the most probable neutral outcome. Daily life for most Americans remains unchanged. Jobs, wages, housing costs, and taxes are driven mostly by domestic policy rather than the conflict overseas. That your total cost of living doesn't really go up or down much because of this, that it's barely a contributing factor one way or the other. I give that a 1. Highly probable. Yeah, short term, your gas goes up. Long term, your gas goes down. Gas has gone up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down. And sometimes nobody was as much as firing a fucking slingshot at anybody, and gas went up or gas went down. And so I don't think you have a long term economic consequence here. The probability of that is high, is what I'm saying. It's not the only outcome possible. It's very high. Financial markets treated as another geopolitical shock. There's going to be short-term volatility, but no lasting structural effect for most people. In other words, your 401k won't go to zero because of this. Warren Buffett will not change, or his company, Berkshire Hathaway, will not change their overriding investment strategy because of this long-term. Nor will BlackRock or anybody else that's in that game. You're not going to make or break your retirement based on this. Like, there's going to be no real impact on your investing and economic output if you look in 5-year blocks. Quarter, half a year, sure. Probability, 1. You see that I'm leaning toward neutral with my analysis. This is what it seems like right now. We'll see if that sticks. And then The conflict fades into the background, like many interventions, costly but largely invisible to the average household over time. In other words, how many times have we done this shit and nobody really cared? And when it ended, everybody pretended they cared and then they didn't care. And no one actually stopped or did anything different in their life. It just kind of like, that's what we do with the military over there and it's not here, so I don't care. Probability, one. And I'll cut to the chase and tell you that I think long-term, I say long-term, not this year, overriding long-term impact of this conflict with Iran in the Middle East, neutral outcome has the highest rating. It doesn't mean none of the other things will happen or that everything in it will happen. I just think that's where we lean towards. So now, since Jack is clearly anti-war, some of you refuse to hear this, but the people that are pro-war have heard it every time and they take big exception with me to it. But I have said since 2008, when I did episode like six, like the first time we ever got into talking about anything like this, I am already opposed to the next war, right? Then since I am opposed to the next war and this war, then obviously I don't think there are going to be any positive outcomes. Well, that would be stupid and wrong. Just because I don't want something doesn't mean that nothing good will come for it. Maybe some good. Maybe not. Maybe no good. Maybe a mix. We don't know. All we can do is say, what are the most four likely things that our country would see as positive that may have a beneficial effect on the average everyday person? Michael, Tom, Mary, Sue, and, you know, Billy, right? Like the guy that's going to stop on the way home from fucking work today, cold and miserable because the cold weather came back to the south. He's in construction, but it wasn't too cold not to work. So he went out, worked all day, got wet, windy, muddy, nasty. He's pissed off, but hey, I picked up my Budweiser and I'm going home, drink a couple beers and watch the news. Will his life be any better? What are the ways that could happen? Number one, Iranian regional influence is weakened, which stabilizes major shipping routes and reduces threats to Gulf energy transport. The fact that that threat exists actually has an impact on oil prices, even when nothing's going on. There is always within, especially the speculative market, and one thing I'm going to explain something here in a second about speculative markets and how they're used in ways people don't understand. But because of that speculative market is always hedging against Iran closing the straits, the Yemen closing the other strait on the other side, and different things like that with transportation and movement of fuel all over the world. So if you take a player off of that board, that reduces the potential for that choke point to be closed down. That would reduce overall oil prices, and low energy prices actually are good for Americans. I didn't say that it was worth killing children for. I just said that is the net output as to the question. Does it make Billy the beer picker upper's life a little bit better? If his gas costs him less at the gas station he fills up when he picks up his six pack, his life is a little bit better. And if that goes across everything Billy buys, because everything is moved with energy, then that's a good thing. Likelihood of it occurring, a two. Notice it's not a one. It's not a three. It's not a three. And the reason it isn't a three is that would be, it's completely unlikely to happen. It's like an outlier. Now, understand if I say 50-50 and I'm saying three is not likely at all. If the odds are, you know, if it's only like 40% or 35% that that happens, it's still a two. I didn't give myself like a 5-point scale to work with. But I'll put it kind of right there in the middle, because so many of the things that everybody assumed that Iran could do, they no longer can. One of the things that really was believed, and I believe this was believed by maybe everybody except people in our government that had intel to the contrary, and I think even the Chinese and Russians who gave a lot of equipment to Iran thought this was true, that their air defense systems would be such with these new detection radar systems from Russia and China that they would be able to tell when F-35s and F-22s and B-2s were in their space, and they would be able to target them. And they weren't. And you can be mad about that, but it doesn't change the fact that it's true. the joke going around now, and it's a pretty base. It's funny because it's true, I guess, if you can laugh at dark humor, and that is, you know, that the Chinese detector for the F-22 is working, or the F-35 is working, because when it blows up, there's an F-35 nearby. And that's been pretty true. So Iran no longer has a Navy, and they had a pretty sizable Navy. They have a few fast boats and things like that going on, and some freaking basically some, you know, modified speedboats and shit like that. But they don't have a Navy anymore. They just don't. And anything they have that kind of sort of looks like a Navy is going to get blown up in the next week if it moves. They really thought they could overwhelm with their drones, their low cost drones, until, well, it turned out that we have basically microwave technology that can scramble them and cause them to just fall out of the sky. And we have a lot of that. So there is so much they can't do anymore. And when this ends, no matter how they talk, they have a lot of fucking shit to fix before they can do anything. So I think there's a reasonable probability that their ability to be a threat to choking off energy goes down. And that could stabilize fuel prices globally. So I'll give it a 2. Global oil supply risk declines, which could contribute to more long, stable, long-term energy prices. So kind of the same thing, except that the broader impact is on the global market. And I give this a 2 as well. And this is what I have to explain again. Like, you people out there that are like, well, our energy, our oil is so expensive because we have to import it from the Middle East. We don't import shit in the grand scheme of things. We don't import oil for shit. We produce 91% of our own oil right now. We import 9, and we do so for efficiency of refinery operations to have certain quantities of specific grades of oil at all times. We don't need it. It just makes everything run a little bit smoother. We export more than we import. We are a net producer of energy, and we have been since Trump's first term. Oh, did that upset some of you? It's a statement of fact. I didn't even give him credit for it. That's when it started. And we have remained a net exporter of energy since the first Trump administration. And we all knew we were going to get there, right? We all knew we were going to get there in time. 100% knew we were going to get there. Mitt Romney was promising North American energy independence when he ran for president in the friggin' 20-aughts, right? So we knew we were going to get there. So we don't even really credit to anybody. But the point is, you can't analyze that. You can't analyze that as to, well, that's why the price of oil goes up. However, oil's a global market. If I'm a U.S. energy producer, and I know I can sell my oil for more if I sell it outside the United States, I'm going to charge more inside the United States because somebody will pay for it. So if you were to kind of level out that, you would get lower and more stable oil prices throughout the globe. Good luck with it. I give that a 2. If I want to cheat my own scoring system, I'd give it a 2.75, almost a 3, which is highly unlikely to happen. A strong military outcome deters other adversaries from pushing against U.S. interests in the near term. That could be positive for the average Billy or Joe or Tommy or Susie or Tammy, in that we would be less likely to have to do this shit because the threat of doing it would be such that we would be able to use soft power to do what we would traditionally use hard power to do. Now, I'm not saying that's good. I'm saying the outcome of that is good for Joe Sixpack. All right. Again, I'm not into my opinions at all here. None. Like, in any way, shape, or form, into my opinion. This is analysis only. And we're getting to the negative for those that want to hear it. You go, but what about? We'll get there. Calm. Just chill. Right? And then another positive output that would actually have benefits to the average person in this country would be U.S. leverage with regional partners increases, which could strengthen alliances and trade security. In other words, the Abraham Accords are stronger. There's less potential conflict between everybody else in the Middle East and each other. Again, I give this a 2. It's really more like a 2.5. it's edging toward the outside of probability, probably more like 75% chance that does not happen. But it does, there is some credible intel already and results already that show that the other Middle Eastern nations tend to be more in line with America's goals and agendas in the Middle East. And if you have people in alignment with a similar agenda, you have less potential conflict, not more. Doesn't mean it was the right way to get there, just means that's where we are. And that's what seems to be happening. You have nations that formerly would have been like all over the U.S. for this, basically aligning with the U.S. right now. Now, there's other factors at play. So, again, that's more like a 2.5. Okay, negative outcomes. This is what so many of you have been waiting for. War spending expands deficits further, which contributes to long-term inflation and debt pressure. I gave that a 1. But wait, Jack, you said the neutral version of that was also a 1. Both things can actually be true. It is a contributing factor. It's just not an overwhelming contributing factor. So I think the amount of money we're spending to do this, especially when you think about what we're doing and who we're attacking, is extensively over the amount of money that we should spend on anything that involves military action in the world on a nation that had not yet attacked us. This is not a defensive action. That's my opinion. That's how I feel. It's not a defensive action. I know the whole line of reasoning. This war really started in 1979 and all. And man, you could have made a pretty good case for the Reagan administration when they took over just freaking ending this shit back then, but we didn't. And when we stuck our nose in this over and over again, we armed Saddam Hussein. We backed up, they're fading out there. NSA's after me. We backed Saddam Hussein with CIA assets and weapons, both under the radar and over the radar, both in the 80s. You know, of course, then we decided to get rid of Saddam Hussein and we invaded Iraq and we had First Gulf War, which I was in service for, and then we had the Second Gulf War and 20 years of nonsense there, and basically nothing really changed. We did the same stupid shit in Afghanistan. So we shouldn't be spending money like that at all. And we do anyway, and we're going to piss the money away on something anyway, but I still think this has some impact on our long-term economic output. And so what I think we could have actually both things be true, and that is that in the short term, the impact of this economically is relatively muted. But as things keep piling onto it and interest compounds on interest, it actually is a pretty big factor in the long-term economic demise of the dollar. Number two, regional instability disrupts oil markets, which pushes fuel and transport costs higher. In other words, the exact opposite of the neutral or the positive. We end up with this kind of loosely held alliance, this loosely held coalition of these other countries. Some that don't exactly, they're getting along better than they used to, but they don't exactly like each other, starting to erupt into international conflict between them. Like having your kids fight with each other and you're a stepfather is kind of how the situation would be for us. You don't really have any real authority over anything, but you have both kids on a stipend and now they're fighting and you really, I don't want to pick between you. You could have other guerrilla forces get involved. Right now, the Houthis are trying to shut down the other strait. It doesn't take much to cause these problems in a narrow band, right? If you're familiar with remember the movie 300? Where 300 soldiers held off this huge army for ungodly amount of time because it was in a narrow pass. And yeah, there was some Hollywood adaptation and stuff, but it's loosely based on history. When you have something like a 12-mile strait and a slow-ass moving convoy of tankers going through it and other cargo ships, it doesn't take much to disable one and then cause complete disruption to all. And I think this actually, I have it ranked as a 2 because I'm ranking it from the standpoint of nationally sanctioned. But if I move it down and say pissed off people, right? If I think of something more like what happened to the USS Cole back in the day, if you know what happened there, and it takes one speedboat with a bomb in it and somebody willing to die because they have nothing else to live for, I think there's a high probability of that. Now, how much impact it can have is why. So happening, I rate a one. Having the actual effect, I'll move that to a two. Less likely, right, to have a long-term output or a long-term effect and impact. The conflict expands or drags on, creating another prolonged military conflict, right? In other words, it becomes another Afghanistan, another Vietnam, another Iran. In spite of the fact that we're getting a pledge of no boots on the ground and whatever, we eventually get into the broken window fallacy. We have to do this now. We're too invested. Sunken cost fallacy is more accurate there, right? We've invested so much and we're so close to victory that we're going to stay so close to victory for 20 more years before we say fuck it and walk out. That I gave a 2, it's more like a 2.8. I think that's highly unlikely. I think there's a lot of people arguing from that standpoint because since they don't want the war, they think that's the best way to make their case. No more forever wars. No, if we put boots on the ground, then, you know, in all these mountains, it's even bigger than Afghanistan. It's 2 times the size of Texas. There's no way we can win with boots on the ground. But nobody's talking about that. The reason I give it a possibility, where we heard this before. I mean, everybody's so familiar with Bush Jr., right, and the Mission Accomplished banner, and they're making memes of Trump in front of the Mission Accomplished banner because he said the war is basically over. I get that. But if you want a quintessential, I don't know why I keep blinking in and out. When that happens, are you guys seeing it? I'm seeing myself blink out, a little swirly thing happen, and I come right back. Are you guys able to hear me when that happens? Let me know in the live chat. But the quintessential example of this in what I would still call recent American history is Vietnam, right? Vietnam, sorry. We're just sending them weapons and ammunition and medical supplies, right? Because they need that. Oh, yeah, we have observers on the ground, but they're just observing. Well, actually, you see, the observers on the ground, they are actively training the South Vietnamese, but that's it. They're not involved. Well, actually, U.S. Special Operations are working with our allies in the South, and they're conducting operations with them, but they're still being led by, well, actually, we have special operations units operating on their own, doing special operations things. Well, actually, we have small military force units, general, like infantry force units. Well, actually, now that we have all that, we need to send just a small amount of troops to help support in the of the mission, and that is all good, and that's all fine, and don't worry about it. But we have a little bit of that, but we need a little bit more of that. And then, you know, a decade later, you know, we're designing a wall with 58,000 names on it. And that, it will never look that way because the entire situation is different. But it may feel exactly that way. The pull, the mission creep, would follow a similar path. And I think that's about a 2. That's a fit. And that's a solid 2 for me. That's a flip a coin. Right. But it will not be with boots on the ground. I think you might see some of those limited special operations or something like that. But, and then everybody see, it's just like Jack said. No, it's not what I said. I said that was the mission creep there. I think that, at least with the current administration, the idea of like landing amphibious marines invading Iran, you know, going old school and parachuting people in, any of that shit, I think is off the table. I think they want nothing to do with it. And that's not pro or con on them. That's just, I think that's where they are. So that's my rating there, is a 2. And then my last one is global backlash, that accelerates. And we shift toward a multipolar world where we have kind of like the U.S. and like either it's China, Russia, or China led. And we have this more of this polarity, Western, Eastern hemisphere, and our influence in the Middle East declines. Now, I list that as a negative outcome for Joe and Harry and Tammy and Susie, the average American person, because it will be perceived that way. I don't know it necessarily is. I think there's so many people shrieking America first, America first. I'm one of them. But I actually mean it. I don't know how we're America first when we're bombing people in a land that the average American couldn't find on a map if their life depended on it, if you didn't label it for them. And half the people that couldn't find it without it being labeled couldn't find it if it was. I don't know how we justify that. I don't know how we benefit from that. But if we have less influence in that region, then we're maybe less likely to do it. But the initial shift and the loss of U.S. hegemony in the Mideast would at least send major ripples through the United States economy. It'd be a major shift necessary and change in the way our system runs after that, and it would be painful while it happened. So I think long term, that could be actually a net positive for us and the rest of the world. Unless, the people that I disagree with are right, and that allows like a Chinese empire to rise to such a level that it becomes actually a peer of the United States. Because I don't care what they're telling you right now, the Chinese military is not a military peer of the United States. And that may be like just being a little conspiratorial, that may be a little bit of why we did this. Like, hey, look what you think you can do, and you can't. I wouldn't do that. I really hope people will start understanding when I make a statement like that. I'm just saying that might be part of what's motivating our government. Oh, you think you have equipment that can do all these things and detect our stealth technology and prevent us from invading airspace and blowing shit out of everything? All right, well, we just snatched a dude out of his bed and blew up all your shit that you gave Venezuela. And then we leveled the entire leadership of government in an hour and blew up all your shit you gave to Iran. Whether you're pro or anti this, don't think that there are not people in fucking China and Russia right now going, holy shit. What? Like completely in effect. Like it didn't work. No, it didn't fucking work. Then you want to get more conspiratorial? It might be like, especially China. China's much more of a chess player. And the number one game in Russia is chess. You want to have your mind tested. Go play an average Russian in chess, unless you're like some kind of master or some shit. What if you give those friendly pseudo allies like your second tier shit and you hold back your best shit and then you fool your adversary into thinking they've got you beat? That's another possibility there. Zakoons here says China thinks in decades, we can't get past tomorrow. That is a very factual statement. I think a lot of people don't realize a lot of China's motivation right now is due to what they call the century of humiliation or two centuries of humiliation, something like that. That they went from being a global empire to dog shit. And they're still psychologically, in spite of all their gains, psychologically still anchored to that and feel like they have not fully regained the respect of the world that they had before that happened. And that's, they say hindsight's 2020, but hindsight is actually usually pretty damn blind. You're never going to be what you were because the world isn't the same place anymore. You're going to go back 100 years, 200 years. The things that made a nation a global power are different today than they were then, and they always will be. So with all this being said, what do I think is most likely out of all those things? I think we are 90% as a country. Again, this is not a morality judgment. Should have, shouldn't have, whatever. I think the life of the average American changes very little because of this. That's my highest probability here, that your tax bill doesn't go down. Your paycheck doesn't go up because of this. Your investment portfolio maybe bumps around a little bit, but overall not much happens. I think there is a tremendous potential for regional conflict expansion, but that to be more of a guerrilla force type thing. I personally think what's left of the government of Iran collapses relatively quickly. I think that the Revolutionary Guard is about the only thing left there. And I know there's a lot of people that don't want to hear that. I know there's a lot of people that don't want to hear that because they want to believe all the bullshit. Iran sank the Abraham Lincoln and shit, which is currently just launching sorties every hour off that deck. That's not what happened. You know, Tel Aviv is leveled. No, it's not. Most of the shit coming out of Iran that looks like they've done something good is clearly AI. I think Iran's current government collapses onto itself. But it's, you know, it is not impossible for the replacement to be more problematic than the current. And that seems to be something we have had so much propaganda flung at us. A lot of us, you know, my age and older, we remember the hostages in Iran. We still carry some anger from that. We remember them being freed. We remember that flight landing in Germany, and we carry that baggage. And so there's this concept, this is the most evil regime that ever existed. No, it's not. I said they were good guys. I didn't say that they all get together and play canasta every weekend with your mom. I'm just saying we've had inherently far more evil regimes in the world. And if we've had worse, you can move to worse. You could also move to better. But I don't think that's going to happen. So like, this is a person that thinks it's been around a while. Zakun says, I don't even know who you're responding to, right? He's building a straw man to argue against. You're hearing what you want to hear. You're the person this show's for. That is for Daytona Beach, USA. I gave you all the things that could happen. I gave you probabilities, no definitive outcome. But somehow, I'm the propagandist that I'm actually teaching you how to get around. You are. Yeah. Sorry, man. You know, there are people who have so chosen to cling to what they want to be true that anything that sounds like what they don't want to be true has to be a lie. And those people are sad. So I really ask you to broaden your horizons. What do we personally do? Because you notice that there are predictions I've made over time, and you would do well, dude, to listen to the guy trying to explain it to you. When I make that prediction, I bat about 800 to 850. That means I'm wrong sometimes, and anybody tells you you're never wrong is full of shit, right? But when I make a definitive, like, this will happen, it's about 80, 85% is going to happen. And I've been doing this for almost 18 years, and everything that I've done is recorded. And you can look the date that I set it up, and then you can look at what happened after it. And I don't have that for you here. And the reason is simple. There is so much complexity here that when somebody like our friend here on one side of the issue, or a friend earlier who was completely on the other side of the issue, locks into this freaking myopic stance of I'm right, so anything outside of my little fucking tunnel is wrong, you know, it's asinine to the extreme. It truly is asinine to the extreme. Because how many players are involved? How many components are involved here, right? How many people have positions of power that can make one decision to completely change the calculus of all these predictions? What happens if somebody in the Saudi royal family takes over because the current leader dies and it turns out he wasn't ever what you thought and throws the U.S. out of Saudi Arabia? Can't happen. You don't know that. Unlikely, sure. Can't. What happens if the Qataris get pissed off at somebody and start freaking using the weapons we gave them to blow the shit out of them and they blame us for it, even though they're also... I mean, there's too much complexity here. So when you figure out what you're going to do in your life, you have to look at volatility and uncertainty. So here's my best advice for you in what to do in regard to this and everything going on in the world today that is unpredictable. Number one, focus on what you actually control, like your income, your skills, your savings, and your resilience, and the form of the things in your savings and your investments. Like, focus on you. As Jordan Peterson would say, make your own freaking room up. Clean your room. And if you can't clean your home room, what does he say? Because I never really listened to him, but I've been told about this. Start with your drawer. My understanding was this whole talk with this was you tell the person to clean their room, to clean your house, and they can't. So you say, well, go, because it's just a wreck. You say, well, go clean your room. And they can't see it. And they say, okay, this drawer. Take everything out of this drawer. This is your sock drawer. Put your socks in your sock drawer and clean your sock drawer. And that's the only thing you have to do. And so the person does that. Wow, I did a thing and it worked. Okay, underwear drawer next, right? And then you clean all the clothes in the dresser where they belong, fix the closet next, make your bed. Vacuum the floor. Now you can because you can see it, right? Do your laundry. Okay, put it away. Okay, I got a system in place. Don't have buildup of laundry anymore. Room is clean. Okay, now do the living room. Now do the kitchen. And if you have to, when you get to the kitchen, you start with the silverware drawer, fix that. Right? Do that. And for those that don't get it, I've heard people talk shit about that talk, even though I've not seen it personally. Like, I get it. It's an analogy, dumbasses. He doesn't actually... Good Lord. He's talking about all the things in your life. You're poorly educated. Focus on educating yourself on one thing that will make your life a little bit better, and then springboard that to something else. Right? You don't have any money. Focus on, first thing you can do is control your spending. Tighten that. Then look for ways to increase your income. Tighten that. Then divert yourself of debt. Tighten that. And pretty soon you have your financial life in a row. That's what I'm telling you here. That is the most important thing that you can do right now, because this conflict I rank mostly as neutral of its effect on your life, but cumulatively with all the other bullshit going on around the world, including things that are going on right here, like how many people are losing jobs to technology innovations and other disruptions. You better focus on this, because remember what I always said about having a job. We'll have a true crisis of employment when we have no problems. That's and then we don't care because we don't have any problems. As long as there's problems, there'll be opportunity to solve those problems for other people, and you can profit from it. See how simple that is? So, focus on what you actually control, your income, skills, savings, and resilience. Two, avoid emotional decision making. That could help a few of our friends in the audience right now in the live chat. Yeah? I mean, it really could. Most of these people, he's building a straw man. Where? What straw man for what case? He doesn't know. He just heard a few things that were to the upside of what he's on the downside of, or the downside of what he's on. I don't even know what he's objecting to, because I don't really care. Yeah? But I know that's emotion. I am an emotional man. I am a passionate man. And I'm very confident of the things that I know well. So when I talk that way, you'll hear passion in my voice. You'll hear certainty in my voice. You'll hear conviction in my voice. But when you hear analysis, what I strive for is dispassionate, Vulcan, logical processing. And I don't know anything more logical, and here's all the things that could happen. Here's the probability of each one individually. Even if you don't like the outcome, that's pretty dispassionate. It's a scoring system. By the way, I picked an editor for my new book, did it the same way, knew some of the people, didn't know some of the people, liked some of the people because I knew them that wanted to do it. Realized I can't make a decision that way, sent everybody a questionnaire, created a scoring system, read all the answers without thinking about who the person was, gave everybody a 1, 2, or 3, kind of the same way. Backwards, though, 3's better, 1's worse. And then the person with the highest score got the job. Dispassionate. It's like hiring somebody for a job. I'm not going to hire you because I like you. I'm going to hire you because I think you do a good job. I think you're my best long-term investment as an employee. So you have to avoid that emotional decision making. When people make financial decisions out of fear or political panic, it rarely leads to good outcomes. The people that sold everything in the middle of an economic crash got burned the hardest. The people who dispassionately went, wow, everything's going super and it can't go on like this forever. I'm going to start taking some money off the table and a little bit more. And a little bit more, and then the crash came, and they went all in. Now we're going to buy at the bottom. They did really well. That is a logical choice, just analyzing the pattern and realizing when you're at an all-time high after all-time high after all-time high, and everybody says it's the time to keep buying, it probably isn't. Because every time that's happened, maybe not the next day or the next week or the next month, but sometime in the relative short term, reality has come and reality has bitten. So that's not a fear-based one. The person who already took the loss and then sells at a loss, And it doesn't sell the loss because, like, oh, I know a new opportunity that will go back up, and they're pretty sure of it. Like, I fucked up, but like that, just like I have to before it goes to zero. Yeah, never works out. Whether it's stock, metal, Bitcoin, doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. So the number one thing you can do for yourself with that in mind is to avoid emotion when you're making long-term decisions that affect long-term outcomes. Okay, I got another one there. By the way, again, this is how you ask a question. I'm not answering it right now, but I do have that starred. Right now, I only have like four things starred. I think one's actually a comment by Jeff Lawton. It has something to do with farmers in Iran, and I want to comment on it. So that and three questions. So if you have a question or a comment you want me to respond to, do it now. If you're sniping at me and you actually want me to return to your comment, you better do that because I can only do so much at once, okay? So our special friend there, you go ahead and do that if you want to give me a gotcha. I love those because they're always fun. Especially from people that make it so simple when it's actually complex. Next thing would be diversify your exposure. And most people think that means, well, make sure you have stocks, bonds, and income, and this over here. No, in all things, you're exposed in so many ways. When you have a car loan, you're exposed to the debt against the depreciating asset, right? When you have a home loan, if you take care of the house anyway, you're basically exposed, but you're mitigated because you have a generally appreciating asset that you have debt exposure to. Those are exposures. So I'm saying diversify the way that you're exposed. Thank you for that. I want to say Danielle here, who has been listening since, God, I want to say 08, 09, 10 at the latest. Oh, I would say you've been 95% correct. That might be a little high. And you always come on and correct what is needed. You don't have a problem saying you were wrong. That's actually the thing I'm most proud of. I'm not most proud of how often I'm right. I'm proud of the fact that when I'm wrong, I don't bury it and pretend it never happened. But if you're new to the show, that might be something you haven't had a lot of exposure to. But your income sources, your investments, don't rely on single fragile pillars. As much as I am a Bitcoin bull, I do not have all my money in Bitcoin, and I think people that do are foolish. I'm 99% confident in that space long term. It doesn't mean I'm right. There's still one. Always hedge. And you hedge by taking other positive affirmative positions, right? And even a short position, right? A hedge fund position, something like that. It's still positive to you. You make the decline be a positive gain, right? So it's still a positive position. An inherently negative position is I'm just going to hide everything in a box under my bed. Well, then deflation is going to eat your fucking lunch, buddy. There's nothing you can do about it. All the things that you're afraid of that would crash the market are all tied to inflation. And the only reason anybody's in the market is due to inflation. And if the market collapses, inflation goes to hell. So all your money being in cash, well, you're fucked. Hey, well, I got gold. If you don't think they can manipulate the gold market, you ain't been paying attention for 100 years. So I'm not saying it's a bad investment. I'm saying you have a diversity of positions economically and a diversity of positions from an income standpoint. If the days of feeling safe with a single source of income, like I have a job, therefore I have an income and I am in demand, therefore I have another job if I need one, therefore my income is stable, that might get you a loan or a credit card, but it's not going to get you through what's coming. And we are only beginning to see that great period of flux that I predicted between 2020 and 2030. And I recently slid that prediction up 5 years and said, the real flux is 2025, 2035. 2020 to 2025 was a preamble. It was a preamble. I was right, just a little overly optimistic. We're in the middle of it right now. And it's going to accelerate from here. Stay informed, but limit your consumption of news. Understanding events matters, but constant media exposure just clouds your judgment. And this is, I'm going to tell you the real reason why that's so true. If you are rah, 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 USA, USA, we're number one, you're going to watch Fox News and Newsmax. You know? If you are, Trump is a big meanie and I'm upset with him doing this, and generally speaking, I like the United States to do well in the military and all, but I don't like Trump, so I don't like this war, you're going to watch fucking MSNBC. Maybe CNN. If you're kind of somewhere gravitating in the middle of that, you're probably going to choose CNN over MSNBC or MS Now, whatever the fuck they call themselves. If you are, we're going to lose, Iran is so strong, we can't win, it's all the Jews' fault and all that shit, then you're going to listen to like RT and Candace Owens and Tucker Carlson. So what actually makes the whole thing of overconsumption of media worse is because you have this place to pick and choose from, and since very few people can experience the discomfort of gathering their media from like five totally different angles and then combining it and trying to discern the truth based on everybody's claims, you're going to choose the one that aligns with your bias. And you're going to make your bias worse. So the only real choice you have is to put a hard limit on how much media you pay attention to. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if it's Candace Owens and Zero Hedge. It doesn't matter if it's Fox News and Newsmax. It doesn't matter if it's Fox News and your three favorite paid GOP Trump supporting accounts on TikTok. It doesn't matter. The net effect is the same. So you have to limit the consumption. You have to look around and say, what's really going on in the world that I can see, touch, and influence? That's the only way you're going to make good decisions for yourself, because most of what you're focused on, no matter who's right, let's say one of those like five silos of information is actually the most right. No matter which one, it doesn't matter which one it is. I'm not going to say one because then you'll think I agree with them. Even if I say one that like 9 out of 10 people listening right now would be like, he fucking hates those people. He just did that to make a point. There'd still be 10%. Stop it, right? Like, only by focusing on what you actually control can you actually see the net impact of your efforts. And that requires shutting those things off, because no matter which silo you choose and no matter how accurate or inaccurate they are, the impact on your life is almost nothing. That's why I waited so much to the neutral in this. It's almost nothing. Your opinions do not influence the decisions of your government. Your opinions do not influence the decisions of other countries' governments. Your opinions do not change the price of oil. Your opinions do not change the price of energy as a whole. Your opinions do not change how easy it is to move a ship from one place to another. Who you vote for doesn't do that either. So you have to stay within your domicile of impact and influence. And to do that effectively, you know, I always say what you do matters and what you don't do matters. And people always take that to like doing is good. But when you choose to do things that are wasteful, you do not have that time to do things that are productive. And so much of the arguing about this is why I don't like these shows. So much of the arguing about this bullshit. Okay. All it is a fucking different distraction. You'll mock the 21-year-old kid who doesn't even know what his life's going to be yet because he spends so much time playing multiplayer games or something, living in his mom's basement and eating Pop-Tarts, but you're doom-scrolling your favorite influencer, or you're glued to Fox News. Really? What's the difference? Go ahead, explain it to me. You also need to position for volatility. See, this is where I'll go a little Bitcoin investor on you. Bitcoin's so volatile. Bro, that's a feature, not a bug. If I'm DCAing into an asset, I want as much fucking volatility as possible. I want this with a long-term upward trend. For those of you can't see because you're on audio, only like 95% of you, right? Like what I'm doing is my fingers going up and down like a heartbeat machine, but my hands rising as it does it. The more volatility I get along the way, and occasionally this, right? The more I get of that, the better I do as a long-term incremental investor. If I get linear upside, I get no benefit to volatility. I have to be able to stomach the volatility to benefit. And you need to be looking at all of your investments, which include investments in yourself, like skill development, your backyard agricultural systems, whatever you're doing, as to the concept that they are being built for is volatility. And that is a principle that is true to the point of being a natural law. And I'll explain what I mean by that. If you are investing heavily in food production and there's a spike in food prices, you benefit. If there's a huge drop in food prices because you benefited before it happened, you have more money and you can capitalize on it when it occurs. But if you're building to volatility, those systems should also adapt. You have a really dry year. You have a really wet year. You have a colder year. You have a war. See, volatility isn't just money. Volatility is all of the things that can and will change that have an impact on the objective you've set forth. So you need to design your life, your systems, your education, your investment, your diet, all of it with volatility in mind. Next, prioritize your physical and mental health. Work on you and actually have that mean something. I think one of the most angry I ever saw a person in my life at me was I had this girl that worked for me. She was very well paid, by the way. She made about $200 to $225 a year. She was a technical recruiter in a company that Neil Franklin and I ran. And Vietnamese girl, kind of spoiled, made a lot of money, came from a family with a lot of money, kind of person who walks around with a Prada bag all the time and everything. Divorced twice. Just some issues, right? But a damn good technical recruiter. I want to be sure I say that. Naive to some points. I won't even get into it today, but she had a thing about gun control, she asked me. And I know her dad ended up having to leave Vietnam at the end of the war, and the government wanted him dead. And she's like, I don't understand why Americans just won't give up their guns. I said, go ask your dad. So just to give you the mindset of this person. But one day I was talking to her and I asked her something about her personal life. And I wasn't asking about dating, but she took it that way. And she said, I'm not really seeing anybody right now. I'm working on myself. And I talked to her a little bit more about it. And said, well, so I'm just like, you know, what do you do? Career development, whatever. I'm working on myself. I got like three times in a row coming at it a different angle. I'm not doing that because I'm working on myself. And I finally said, remember, this woman works for me, right? And I said, okay. So what are you doing to work on yourself? Since I can't guess it, since I haven't been able to figure it out yet, like, what are you doing to work on yourself? Are you taking courses in something? Are you spending time meditating? And she got very mad and very flustered. And for a person with Vietnamese complexion, turned very, very red, and was clearly very upset at me. Now, what I was doing is I was actually trying to be a good boss. And that means also being a good mentor. And since this woman had so much talent, I was like, you know, it'd be great if you really were working on yourself, but she wasn't doing anything. And so many people, when you tell them to work on themselves, they think what that means is to just withdraw and space out or something. I don't know. When I say work on yourself, I mean to have a positive, proactive regime in your life that is designed to make you a better you. We should all do that. We should teach that in school. By the time a third grader is asked the question of what is the most important thing you can work on, they should pair it back like their program, because at that age, that's what you end up doing when you teach, work on myself, improve myself, be a better me. And I'm saying physically and mentally, you should be working on being a better you. Now, there's people that you reach just, I'm there too, you reach a certain age, and there's a certain amount of physical decline. Doesn't mean you have to just run with it. Doesn't mean you just let it happen. Do something about it. Strengthen yourself emotionally, spiritually, and physically, whatever that means to you. If you're a Christian, maybe that's going to church, joining a church group. If you're like me and you're more of a deist, it means maybe spending more time in nature and contemplating the nature of man in the universe, whatever that is. So that you have more resolve within you and more physical resilience as well. So that you live better and live longer than you would have otherwise. Right. None of us can actually determine, you know, the date we're going to go out unless we do something horrible like commit suicide. Right. There's no way that we can say I am going to live to be 120. People doing that are selling snake oil. They're full of shit. But we can determine, hey, man, I really don't want to go out so hard. You know, I don't want to go out like my granddad did. He spent the last 3 years of his life laying in a bed with his legs stuffed up to his chest. It was so overriding on his physicality that literally when they put him in the casket, they hid his legs because they were unable to straighten them out. I don't want to go out that way. Right. If I live to be 90 and I live good all the way right up till the end, great. If I live to be 88, I'd rather live to be 88 and live good all the way to the end than live to be 92 and spend the last 4 years of my life in a bed. If I can. And that is the mindset I'm talking about. You know, I have a regime I'm using right now to improve myself, and I've always been doing something, whether it's listening to audiobooks, whether it's studying, whether it's learning, like something to be better at. And be careful what you pick to become better at, because that time is spent and it's gone. And, you know, there's worse things to pick being better at than, like, I don't know, building wealth. Because that lets you, that enables you to do other things. And so from the time, I'm going to talk to you young people right now, and Danielle's telling something about you. I pulled up her comment. I can't read it right now, but something about the younger folks listening. You are going to spend the time between your 20th birthday and your 30th birthday getting better at something. Even if it's negative, you're going to get better at it. Bitching, complaining, moaning, putting on weight, getting fat, convincing yourself that it's all somebody else's fault can be one of those things. Or you could spend that time becoming physically more strong and stable, developing better dietary habits, developing expertise in an area that will serve you well for the rest of your life. There's a fork, because nothing is the negative choice. Well, I'm not going to do either one. No, yeah, you are. If you do not proactively pursue the positive, you will by default walk the negative path, period. There's no way around it. And you can be very comfortable on that negative path. If you happen to hit it well with a good career, and you have a good income, and you can wake up one day and realize you're carrying 85 fucking pounds that you don't want on your body. And then you have to rebuild in your fucking 40s, and it's hard, guys. It's way harder than just keeping it from your 20s. Ask me how I know. But no matter where you are, start walking that positive path of self-improvement physically and mentally now. Because no matter what happens, that matters. And then think generationally. You know, I call it the 7x7 filter. If it's an important decision, you run the 7x7 filter. What does this mean for me in the next 7 minutes, 7 hours, 7 days, 7 weeks, 7 months, 7 years, 7 decades? That's 7-generational thinking. If you're thinking out 7 decades, by default, you have a impact that is going out into your 7th generation. And the reason I like that 7 decades number is most people don't have much influence that they leave behind until they're about 20. 7 decades is 90. Most people don't live long that live about that long, or die soon afterwards. So that's about the period you get, is about 7 decades to do shit that has deep, long lasting impacts to someone connected to you from the future back. Seven generations is about 160 years. Your grandchildren will probably know those people, assuming you have grandchildren. Here's the funny thing. Here's the funny freaking thing about that. Maybe funny's not the word, the weird thing about that. When you tell somebody to think generationally, they generally think that means selfless sacrifice for the entirety of your existence. Everything I do is for the great, great grandchild I'll never know, and I'll never get to see the benefit of it. But the person that thinks in 7 generations does sacrifice in a decade. They do better in the second, and they do phenomenally better in the third. The generational thinker actually has better short-term relative results. They have better retirements. They live better and look better when they're 50. Than the guy who lived better and looked better when he was 25. Because he was going to the gym when he was 25, but he was also fucking off all the time, spending all the money all the time. And as he hit his 30s and he got married, he joined all the organizations and the clubs and he got fat. And he put on debt. And he set up college funds for his kids and all. The guy does pretty well. But the guy that did the sacrifice early didn't have to sacrifice anywhere near as much in the middle when he was at peak earning years and peak investing years. And long before he had to retire, he either chose to retire or transitioned into something else that made his life a little bit better while still being able to earn really, really well. Those are your choices. But that comes from those last two. Those are the most two important things I can advise you in your life, not just today, but anytime. Prioritize your physical and mental health and think in generations, not in weeks, not in months. Anyway, appreciate you guys being with me today. I'm going to go through these questions. I got about six. What I'm going to do right now is I'm going to switch over to that view, and I'm going to real quickly or real slowly kind of scroll through the questions. So if you think you have a question or a comment in and you don't see it come up here, then you need to re-ask it while I do my kind of closing segment, and then I'll come back and I will answer all these questions and thank Amy for her super chat as well. So with that in mind, let's go ahead and wrap up some of the other things first today. Number one, I wrote this book that really hits on a lot of things that we covered here at the end called Laws of Life, Ditch the System, Design Your Life. And that's what it's about. It's about these laws of how humans work and how humans interact. And if you understand and follow these laws, you can build an incredible life and you can design an incredible life. And you can find out more just by looking for Laws of Life on Amazon or go to jackslaws.com. But something that came out of that was all the work that we've been doing with AI. And we have run three roles of this AI for Entrepreneurs course. The results the students have been phenomenal. We haven't actually set a launch date for the next round yet, but the last three rounds did in fact sell out. The last round sold out a little slower, but it was right up against Christmas. So I think that's why, because we still have a huge list of people that have signed up to sign up for the course, to pre-register. And I'm going to remind you guys, if you want to do that, you should do that now. If you want to get in that course, if you want to build a business, this course is for you. If you just want to learn AI, I'm working on some other stuff, but I've got these other books I'm trying to do, and it's going to take me time to get it out. This course is for entrepreneurs, specifically small companies, solopreneurs, things like that. If you want to build that in your life, or you already have something you want to expand it, you want to take this course. We only take 100 people at a time. So get on over to Jack's Laws. There'll be a little banner at the top. Click that and sign up and pre-register for this course, because when it comes, it sells out quickly. We usually try to give you a pretty good several week run up to it. I've got two out of town things coming up. That makes it a little harder to support from my end. I'm going to talk to Tom this week. We'll come up with a hard launch date. But if you want to be involved, pre-register for it, because you are not getting in if you are not pre-registered. Next up today, though, our item of the day. Remember, you can always support the show and the work that we do just by doing your online shopping, starting from where? tspaz.com, T-S-P-A-Z, tspaz.com. If you get on over there, before you buy something online, you'll help us out no matter what it is. Today's item of the day is the DeWalt 20-volt max cordless pruner. And for those of you in the video, I happen to have one for you to get a better look at right here. That'll give you a little more scale on it. This thing is a beast. It is an electric pruner. And it is like to replace hand pruners, and in this case, some pretty daggone honking big hand pruners. It's got a little safety on it. You squeeze that down, and then this is the pedo part maker 101, man. If you work for the mob or something, you could take all kinds of parts off to collect what you had due to you. But what it's really for is trees and bushes and shrubs. It is incredibly powerful. I have a full video review for you. You can find that at thesurvivalpodcast.com or tspaz.com. Even has a little light so you can see what you're doing. And I love this tool. I own two of them. That tells you how much I love it. When it comes to doing a lot of pruning work, and we're coming up on a time when a lot of that's going to happen, these are freaking fantastic. And they're on sale today, $90, no battery, no charger. That's bare tool only. You guys are already on the DeWalt platform. By the way, if you're on a different platform and you really want this tool, they make adapters. So you can get a DeWalt adapter to make like your Makita work or anything. But on that, wait, there's more. Look at this. Did DeWalt make a little one, a little version of it, a little cute one? No. This is made by a company called Yavv, Y-A-W-V, and it is a miniature version. They made it in black and yellow, so it looks nice to DeWalt people. It's not quite as powerful, but it's nothing to do with the power because it uses a DeWalt battery. That's what makes it cool. These are $50, and it'll ship to you bare tool just like that if you're a DeWalt user. Makita and Ryobi, they make one for you guys too, and between those and battery adapters, anybody should be able to do this if they want to, find one that will work. Why would you have this instead of that big one? It's lighter and smaller. It gets into places others don't. My wife, as long as what she's pruning is small enough stalk, which is up to about a half inch, She prefers this because lighter and easier on her hands. I prefer it when I'm doing like work in my garden. When I'm doing work in my garden and it's like overgrown vines from last year, something you're just pulling out and cutting it because it's, if you rip it, you're going to tear the ground out for stuff like that. And for smaller stuff, I actually prefer it. So I have both and you might want that as well. But either way, like it depends on, you know, size your homestead, what kind of work you're doing, et cetera. Those of you that are big into making biochar, especially in small scale, like using like a Weber kettle grill as a kiln or something, there's all kinds of information about that in my write-up as well. But check these out. And remember, it doesn't matter if you buy them. You can buy some online. Just go to tspaz.com. If you think that we provide value to you and you'd want to help us, that would be a great way to help us out. That doesn't really cost you anything at all. Just maybe a couple extra seconds of your time. And at T-Spaz, you'll find everything I've reviewed. I put things through their paces. And you, what you won't find there is, this thing sucks, don't buy it. With a few exceptions of, they don't make it anymore, so now buy this. Or I found something better, so now buy this. If it's not good, I don't talk about it. And just like that item right there, the stuff I recommend is all stuff that I bought in my own life. And I started doing the reviews and figuring I can make a few bucks off of it when people started asking me my opinion on all this stuff. And I'm like, well, I do have a lot of stuff. And I do put a lot of research into things before I pick them up. And I'm a pretty, well, I'm an asshole when it comes to quality. I expect quality to be what's promised. And so when it's not, I'm pretty critical. So anyway, let's see what we can do here. Eka Mouse. Hey, I don't know where she was, but she showed back up last week, and I'm glad she's back. Eka Mouse says, what the F? There are 92 watching, get only 29 thumbs up. Smash that like, smash the like button and let the YouTube algorithm know it's worth sharing with other people or face my fiery wrath. So not really a question, but thank you for that, Eka Mouse. Next up, what do we got here? We have question from Vince. Let's leave it at that. Vince the Fat Flat Farmer. After the U.S. fixes the world's oil shipping problems, do you think that maybe we could get some new refineries here in the U.S. to refine our own oil? Well, that's interesting. We refine our own oil. Okay? We produce 92% of our own, or 91% of our own oil. We don't send it to another country to refine it for us. Does that mean we have sufficient refining capacity to deal with problems when they happen? No, and it would be nice for us to start building some more refineries. My understanding is there's actually a brand new refinery being built in Texas right now, though, kind of like Texas, Louisiana, out in that Beaumont area, that we're finally building a new modern refinery. So that is progress, but that'd be great if we did. I don't know if it's really a question. That's more of a rhetorical, right? Jeff Lawton says, I have, and this is interesting to have him comment here. Jeff says, I have worked with the Iranian Ministry of Agriculture in Iran. The Iranians are the best organic farmers and environmental engineers with the best suitable operations on earth. This is our biggest loss, but it's also why we really, the U.S. needs to go to war with them. I think what he's saying is that protects our agricultural hegemony, maybe. I'm not sure about that, Jeff. I don't know. I don't think that's why we went to war with Iran. I think that would be very low on a list of reasons. I do think that the expertise of agriculture in the Middle East, specifically if you get outside of the people that are under the thumb of the United States, is some of the highest quality expertise in the world, especially in certain regions. And that we have lost so much of the wisdom of those systems of agriculture. And let's do a thought experiment here on why agriculture might be a place that we should focus more. The entire reasoning behind the current agricultural system that we have is we have to feed this huge population of people, but we need a very small number of people relative to the population to be able to produce those things. So all the other people can do all the other productive things like work in factories and work swing shift and work in the healthcare system, caring for people that have type 37 diabetes and all the other things, right? Well, maybe we don't need that if people were healthy. Maybe a lot, like right now, the largest growth in employment in the United States is in the healthcare sector. And that's been the case for a long time. And it ain't doctors, by the way. I'm just saying, it's administrators, it's technicians, it's people to clean people's adult diapers, it's people to work in remote clinics, not really remote clinics, smaller clinics that do dialysis. DaVita is one of the biggest growing companies in the medical center, which is primarily giving end of life kidney dialysis to keep life going and to hopefully get a transplant someday to people with blown up kidneys from type 2 diabetes. There's a lot of things that a lot of people are doing that maybe we don't need them doing, but there's also a lot of things that people are doing that whether we need it or not, we don't need those people to do it anymore because AI, automation, robotics, et cetera, is taking things over. Additionally, at the same time, I'm going to come back to agriculture here in a second, I promise, folks. We have wrung out the sponge on profitability in a system that judges every company on its ability to make not a profit every year, but more profit next year than it made last year. You're dog shit. You make the same, you make good money, you return good value to shareholders, you make roughly the same amount of money every year adjusted to inflation. So yeah, your sales are going up a little bit, your profit's going up a little bit, but it basically matches inflation. You're an incredibly stable company. You do everything right. You're moral and ethical. You employ a lot of people. Your employees like working there. Your customers love you. The fucking market hates you. You're dog shit. You're not even dog shit. You're what's under the dog shit after the dog shit starts to rot and the maggots are eating it and the maggot shit is rotting into the earth. And you're not even that because that is perceived as valuable as fertilizer. You are useless to the market if you are a stable but non-growing company. That's where we live. So the companies that's going to keep increasing that profit margin, what is the one thing left? They can't increase efficiency much more from a standpoint of just raw efficiency, right? They can't do it. They can't drive down the cost of the raw materials any further. But the only variable left is energy. That's part of why all this shit's going on. So what is the one thing they can do? What is the one expense that they can actually cut? And in some cases, cut a lot of it, even without robotics, AI, and automation, right? That actually has a direct impact on profitability. Headcount. Employee headcount. So when you get a guy like Elon Musk buys Twitter, cuts 80% of the workforce, and nothing bad happens, sends a message, doesn't it? Notice that when he did that, he didn't like immediately start using AI to replace those people. He just got rid of them and said, if something really bad happens, we can go hire one of them back or hire somebody to do what they did. So anybody that looks like we don't need them, get rid of them. Let's see what happens. And the answer was nothing. A whole bunch of people that spent all day eating food and doing yoga and complaining about the world and censoring people were let go and son of a bitch, nothing happened. How much could that be replaced? What does employment look like over the next 20, 30, 40 years in that reality? What does the world look like that used to be primarily a one income household? And all of a sudden in the 1970s became the default was a two income household. And everything in humanity worked up until that point with one income per household. Running headlong into this reality of fiat runaway money, fiat runaway economy, fiat runaway society, and corporations at their last gasp, the only way we can increase profit is to have less people do the work. It looks like a lot of unemployed people. So if we have a lot of unemployed people and we develop these systems that are more like midden farms, more small scale, super high quality, super nutritious, more local food. Those people need something to do, don't they? And it's one of the most rewarding things a human being can do. It would blow you away if you traveled rural Mexico, especially down in kind of what they call the waste, the thin part, and went up into these farms that are up in the steep hills where it has not converted to modern agriculture, because it can't. Because you can't plow, 20-degree slopes with little terraces. And just looked at the varieties and the diversity of maize, what we call corn, that they grow. Things you've never seen, never heard of. And the sad part is right now, locally, that farmer is undercut by American farms selling dog shit GMO corn. Because it's so cheap to produce. But if you build a world based on value, where people value things, we have this incredible, like, they're not diversity, 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 diversity for the sake of diversity. What if we had diversity because it was a natural result of effort? That's resilience. So I think there's an incredible opportunity to restore global stability by restoring traditional agricultural techniques and marrying them to what we've learned in the last 5,000 years on top of that. And I really hope Jeff stuck around to hear that. He probably didn't. I might snip that and send it to him. Next up, Jesse says, what is your quick take on the current Cuba situation? Well, I'm going to piss off the anti crowd, the we hate Trump crowd, the anti Orange Man crowd right now a lot, but it don't have nothing to do with him in reality. This is another, this is the quick analysis though of the same type of thing here. Cuba is a country that, with the support of a country like America, even just economically and verbally and sending certain signals and offering certain things after all these years of sanctions based on its size and the population ratio to its government, is ripe for a popular revolution retaking the country back from communism. It's actually the lowest hanging fruit, and I think it's why they left it for last. There is a shitload of pent up desire for freedom in that country. Since old man Castro kicked the bucket, things have not gotten better. They've gotten worse. The Soviet Union cut bait with them when it collapsed, that put them on the edge. And at that time, had we wanted to, we could have normalized relations with Cuba and Castro would have given us everything we asked for and we squandered it. And if you want to know more about that, going all the way back into the, honestly, Reagan could have done that. That's how old that is. Read Lee Iacocca's book, Where Have All the Leaders Gone? And you'll hear stories of Lee Iacocca in the backseat of a fucking limousine with shotguns going out in the middle of nowhere with Fidel Castro to hunt doves. Okay? Like, I'm not just basing this on some random bullshit. Like, I have been a well-read person my whole life, and I don't go to the media. I go to the people that experience things to understand what was actually going on, and people that were diametrically opposed to each other by examining both sides they get. So, all in, I think that Cuba is going to experience some form of popular revolution and something akin to a democracy unfolding, but it will still be a very largely socialist economy. I think it will become very possible in maybe the next 4 or 5 years for people who are dissidents from Castro's Cuba and their descendants to go back to Cuba to visit, to be there if they want to be there. And I think we will have overall fairly positive relations with Cuba within 5 years. And I also think that you'll be able to buy Cuban cigars again. And I do think all that. So if that upsets you because you hate Trump, I don't care. And I will tell you, just like the Iran thing, and I think the probability of Cuba is much higher. If Trump pulls that shit off, he will be seen as a hero, if nothing else, by the Cuban population of Florida, who already tend to prefer Republicans. It's not my opinion of whether it's good or bad or he really is a hero. Just, I'm telling you the marketing that will come behind it. I think that's very probable. Far more probable than getting a positive outcome in the Middle East. But again, if he pulls that off and you hate him, you're really going to hate that shit, because he'll go down as one of the, after being impeached twice, losing an election, having to come back and win again, being convicted, he does all that shit. His harshest critics that are actually logical, not just emotional and not just tribal, will even have to say, oh, fuck. What do you mean? Okay. Those are all good things. Like, anybody saying that's bad, especially after the fact. And I'm sure there'll be a lot of trying to come up with, but it really wasn't him, right? Okay. Whatever, man. Let's go on from there. Got kind of sidetracked on that one. That question, or that point by Jeff was great, by the way. Ben says, do you think Dubai's position will change as a new economic hub? People are panic selling their properties at the moment because of the – no, I don't. Panic sellers are great. I love panic sellers. Panic sellers are the greatest thing that ever happens. You know, I mentioned Bitcoin a couple times in this show today. And I want to pull up something that kind of makes my point about that. So Peter Schiff has been the greatest critic of Bitcoin. It's well known anyway, that, you know, has a huge following, that type of thing, right? Boomer Schiff. And when the ETFs came out, it was an example of when you can't spin something to the negative, but you do it anyway. And what he said was the ETFs are actually bad for Bitcoin, because when all that institutional money comes in there, these people just trade. They don't hold crazy like all these crazy, you know, activist types and these anarchists and these libertarians do. And when they sense danger, they just liquidate their stuff. Really? That's interesting, because this graph says you're wrong, dude. This graph shows you what people that think logically and methodically about investing do when people panic sell. So now it comes back to Ben's question. So for those that can't see this, I'll explain it. But if I come back to about right here, this is November 27th. This is when the Bitcoin current bull market really began. And you can see there was a little dive off before that. Almost like institutional investors sense that you're heading in that direction. But look what has happened. This is just how much Bitcoin is held collectively by the ETFs. There is the growth, the inflection of the growth point from that point forward is almost equal to the initial run up when they were first launched. In other words, they're stacking their asses off while the retail panic sellers sell. And I'm going to tell you, when it comes to real estate, that's more the case. Now, it's you can't go buying houses on a $100 weekly DCA, really, right? Like, there are REITs and things you can invest into like that, but you can't just go buying property in Dubai or whatever. But when people panic sell, the people that are like billionaire type companies, billionaire, multi-billionaire companies, that's when they buy. That's when they buy. I would tell you, I would invest in real estate right now in Dubai before I would in New York City. Because at least Dubai is being run by, you know, they're both being run by Arabic people at this point, and that's all good and well. But the people in Dubai are highly competent at managing a society. Even if I wouldn't run it the way they do, I can't say they're not competent. The people running New York City right now are morons. So I would be more likely to be a panic buyer, right? I'm buying against the panic in Dubai right now than I would be buying in New York City. Now, I really don't want to buy either one. Neither one of them fits with my goals. But if I'm doing this purely on an economics basis, yeah, that's what I'm doing. Amy throws me a $20 super chat, says gas money. I used your sprouting techniques this week. Well, I'm glad you did that. Thank you. I appreciate that. I think she's talking about the paper towel technique, which, if you've never heard that before, you have seeds that are hard to germinate. You take a paper towel, maybe three or four layers of it. You wet it. You squeeze it out really good. You fold it down into a little square. You put your seeds on one side. You fold it in half. You stick that in a Ziploc bag. You put a date on it. You stick it in a nice warm place where you'll see it. You check it every day. And when you see little rootlets start to come out, then you plant your seeds. You get much better results that way, especially with things that are hard to sprout. Then this wasn't a question, but it did catch my eye. Dennis says, and Dennis has been around a long time as well, it's amazing how similar Jack and Tony Robbins are. I took his Unleash Your Power seminar. That's interesting to me, because I've always tried not to be, you know, that Zig Ziglar, Tony Robbins, motivational, rah-rah, you can guy. But I also think that there are basic things that you can do that actually improve your life. And when you break it down to the brass tacks, anybody teaching anything that works, and for Robbins, you know, Robbins is not a flash in the pan gone guy. He is like Ziglar from back in the day. People that stick around in that space for that long and continue to be sought out, generally they're teaching the right techniques and processes. So I will take that as a compliment, sir. Thank you very much. Just make values inspired decisions. Good decisions build wealth. Okay. I don't know what you're responding to. I'm just looking to see if there's anybody else to talk to. Don't see anybody else asking a question. Oh, I got one. Eka Mouse. I'll always give Eka Mouse. But she's still on it. Only 72 thumbs showing. Did you all step away from the monitor and make coffee like I did and forget I was watching? Smash that like or I smash your fingers. Mwahaha. Thanks, Eek. Yeah, definitely, guys. Really please hit that like if you liked what we had to say today. I really appreciate it. And leave us a comment. I know a lot of you were very active today in the chat. We had it really going. But the chat doesn't really help us as far as like video discovery or anything like that. So when you're done, if you really like the show, it'd be great if you could just drop us a comment, including what you disagreed with. Some of my best shows come from people that disagree with me. Sometimes like, aha, you're wrong, and I'll prove it. Sometimes like the disagreement, I'm like, that's not what I said. And then I know I was misunderstood. And then we could actually dig into a whole different angle on that where actually I agree with you. And sometimes it just makes me think of things that I didn't think of before because I don't know everything. And I might even be like, well, I don't know if I was wrong, but I was wrong about this part, and I'm open to that. And so I'm always open to discussion. I'm always open to feedback. Just because I slam people sometimes doesn't mean I'm not open to feedback. If it's logical and it's not name-calling and it's not like a bunch of bravado bullshit, you don't know anything. Like, I don't tolerate people like that. I'll tell you, kind of wrapping completely up here, I've had this change in philosophy over the years. When I first started, and you start to build up a podcast like this, you start to get a lot of feedback, some of it negative, some of it positive. And the negative always seems so harsh because you've never really been attacked that way by people that don't even know you before. And then real quick, you develop a thick skin. You get into kind of the backhand smack, like, piss off. I didn't ask for you. Silence. I kill you, right? Like, and you just slaughter them. And then you kind of think they're idiots. And then eventually you realize, like, how sad is it? Like, I'm not talking about negative comments now. I'm talking about the people that are like hate filled, like they're professional haters. They track you. They become your personal trolls and stuff. How sad is it? How sad is it that a person has the time and energy in their life to latch on to somebody as low level as Jack Spirko and show up time and time again to throw hate? And so now instead of like the backhands, I actually pity people like that. I pity people like that. You know, you're a status cuck, or I pity you. Like how you got there, I don't even want to try to figure out the mental gymnastics you went through to try to get there. Right? He's building a straw man. You don't even know what I'm talking about. Right? I don't even know how you got there. But I feel bad for you. Because I know the person doing that isn't doing all this other shit that I just got compared to Tony Robbins for in building the positive aspects of their life. You're not building a family. You're not building a career. You're not building a skill set. You're not building a knowledge base. You're trying to convince the world the earth is flat, either literally or figuratively. And no one will care. And all that effort, all that potential talent, all that potential greatness is wasted in temporal capital that you'll never get back. You could have been building something of your own. If you really think I'm wrong, you could even be building a great platform to explain your view to people. But no, you're here throwing hate at me or other creators. And this is across the board. In my new book, I talk about a woman who tumbles rocks on TikTok. She tumbles rocks. She puts rocks in a rock tumbler and says, what do you think these are going to look like? And she tumbles them and she puts them in shows like, what could we have done different? Things like that. Very nice kind of middle-aged soccer momish lady. Not a big thing for me. I just happened to notice her. And that's why she ended up in the book. But when I was like 8, I would have loved freaking content like that. Just mainly her people watching her are like homeschool moms and kids and stuff like that. And yet you'll still have that person who looks like comic book guy from the fucking Simpsons. He does stupid and hate, spitting hate. How sad is that person? How sad is that? The thing is, I'm not really willing to give up on, if you're hearing me and that's you, I'm not willing to give up on you yet. I'm not willing to quit on you yet. Maybe one of the reasons you don't like people like me is we believe in you more than you believe in yourself. I believe that even if you take a completely opposite path from me, you can do something great with your life that'll last and matter. I challenge you to shut up long enough, to listen to yourself long enough, to believe in yourself enough to go do it instead of worry about what other people should be doing different. Thank you. I'll catch you tomorrow with a completely different subject, I promise. Just run you round. They said you should have a house.
the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month.